So there's a number of things here, obviously, that come up here. The first one, and I guess at this point then we move away from evidence potentially so far and into speculations or conclusions that you might have based on this information. And
You're about to ask me a question that I love to answer. Go ahead.
well, we'll see if it's one. And basically, it is what are they looking for here? Obviously, you mentioned the integration program that they want to integrate with us for whatever reason. And there's two strands to this. And one is that why do they want to integrate with us? What's the point of that? And
Yes.
what is the DNA factor in this as well? Because it seems then that an important thing here is they want to mingle for whatever reason their DNA with us. And it doesn't matter how, if I can call it that, how diluted it is, so to speak, meaning that it's only certain properties from them that they want to carry on over into these hybrids.
Well, you've asked, those are two different questions.
Yes.
The first one is the question that I expect you to ask. Why? Why do this in the first place?
Yeah.
And it's the question I love to answer. That is the question.
Yeah.
And the answer is, we don't know why. We do not know why. Now I'm going to get into some of the arguments in favor of this phenomenon. If this were psychological, and Henry, in this situation, this phenomenon is psychological or it's happening. There's nothing in the middle.
Right.
People are inventing this for whatever reason. I don't care whether they're crazy, it's pathology, it's psychiatric, or whether it's psychological, or they picked it up in popular culture, or whatever it is, it's still coming out of their minds, it's not actually happening, or it's happening. So when you take a look at if this is psychological, we'd know why. They're inventing everything else, they'd invent why. We'd have a whole series of different whys. We don't have whys. We don't know. Abductees don't know why. They don't know what the hell's going on. All they know is what's happening to them. They don't know the big picture, generally speaking. We don't know why. Here's something else. Telepathy. There's no particular reason to say that all communication is telepathic. If this were psychological, the vast majority of people, one would assume, would say, "No, what do you mean? They're talking to me, their lips are moving, and I can hear it through my ears, and they speak with strange accents." We don't get that. All communication is telepathic, even though there's no reason to say that. And if it were psychological, that wouldn't happen. The second, here's something else that I discovered early on that Bud Hopkins discovered, but here's the way you look at it. People tell me, they're taking me out of my, I'm getting off the couch now and I'm moving towards the window. There's a light coming into the window. Now they're taking me to, I'm going through the window. I say, whoa, whoa, wait a minute now. Hang on a second. When you're at the window, do you open the window? And they'll say, no, I don't open the window, no. And I'll say, well, do these beings open the window? I say, no, they don't open the window. I say, well, does the window open by itself in some way? So you can go out the window. They say, no, I think I'm going right through the closed window. Does anybody else ever say that? And the answer is, yeah, everybody says that. Psychologically, nobody should say that because if they're telling me a story that they're making up for, even though if they don't know it, opening the window is perfectly logical. And not a stumbling block to belief.
Right.
In other words, why not open the window? Everything is fine then.
Right.
But they say, no, I'm not. I don't know what's happening. I'm going right through the window. And they all say that. It goes, I mean, in other words, the psychological aspects that we should be seeing if people were making this up. No patterns, obviously. People in different cultures will be saying different things. People with different educational levels might be saying different things. People who, let's just say, if your parents kept you in a closet for the first 9 years of your life, you might be saying different things,
Yeah.
But everybody says the same thing. I've worked with people who are themselves psychiatrists and psychologists and medical doctors and attorneys and college professors and high school teachers and people who could never hold a job in their lives and couldn't get it together. And everybody in between, and they all say exactly the same things. It is breathtakingly precise. It's unbelievable. It's if it wasn't any of those things, if it was all over the place, I would have thought there would be no abduction phenomenon. It's obviously psychological, but it does not fit any psychological category. Mm. Not only that, but people are physically missing from their normal environments when they are abducted.
Right, right.
Search parties have been called out. Police have been called. Children are hunted for their parents. Parents are hunted for their kids, look for their kids. People are abducted in groups and can confirm each other's abduction. People see other people being abducted and are not abducted. Now, that's rare, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And in other words, there's all these other, and as soon as you start talking about people being abducted in groups, all psychological theories just fall to the wayside. There's a brick wall there. What the psychologists scratch their heads and pretend it doesn't exist. Pretend that evidence doesn't exist and just go on with their own theories about what's going on and ignore it.
Yeah.
But the fact is that all these things put together, they lead me into this conclusion of hybrid integration. And it's an area that I never, ever in my life would have ever thought I would be at. When I started doing this in 1986, I never would have imagined the conclusions that I would be drawing from this. It is not as if I've led people into thinking this and that. It's they have led me kicking and screaming. I don't want to go there.
What's the plan if indeed it is the case that
a DNA situation?
Well, that too. Yeah. Okay. Let's go there. Yeah.
Well, the question is, how many people are abductees and how many people are non-abductees, and how is this transmitted through generations? Hopkins found early on that it's an intergenerational phenomenon. If a person is abducted, their mother or their father was an abductee. Basically, you're not going to be an abductee when you get to be 40 years old. It's not going to happen. It's going to happen when you're 8 months old, but it's not going to happen when you're 80.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because your mother or your father was an abductee. Now, here's the problem. And here comes a dispute between Bud and I. We debate this. I think that when a person who's an abductee marries a non-abductee, I think that all the kids will be abductees.
Hmm.
Bud thinks that that's not necessarily the case, that not all the kids will be abductees, just some of them. That's our debate.
Yeah.
But you can see it, no matter what, it spreads through the society, through the generations, and it also begins to include non-abductees in the spreading of them.
So that means that it's like a cell growth here, so to speak. It's spreading. The more hybrids we have, and the more who are abducted, rather, the more people will get abducted, and the more we'll turn into hybrids. That's what you're saying.
Right. That's right. What happens is, as long as an abductee marries a non-abductee, you get a cone-like spreading out in the society.
Yeah.
If an abductee marries another abductee, that is going to be lessened. It's going to be more linear. But because their children then will marry non-abductees, and more abductees will be. So the population increases, the abduction phenomenon increases, but the abduction phenomenon actually increases at a greater rate,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing in the society. So the question is, well, how long will it be before everybody in the whole world is an abductee?
Yeah, right.
I actually had a mathematician work this out for me. Well, of course, it depends on how many abductees, on how many people you start with. And we know that if you start with, let's just say, 1 million people or whatever, it's not a global phenomenon. It's not an American phenomenon. It's a Swedish phenomenon. It's an Italian phenomenon. It's French. It's Japanese. It's Indian. It's Egyptian. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But the question then is, you know, if you start with 1 million people or 100,000, because of the children business, it increases almost exponentially. And so you can estimate, let's just say, 7 to 10 generations, and everybody would be an abductee. It's like doubling, you know, the squares on a checkerboard. You do a double, 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 and by the time you get to the square number 64, the number is astronomical.
Yeah.
It's not quite like that. but the number does increase exponentially. So 7 to 10 generations. Well, we know that only a small percentage of the people are in fact abductees. Maybe 5%.
Yeah. But that's still a lot. That's, we're talking many hundreds of millions.
Right. In sheer numbers, it's enormous. And we know this to a fair degree of certainty because of a poll that Hopkins and I ran in 1991 through the Roper Organization. We asked people 10 questions that abductees answer yes to in very, very high frequency, and non-abductees answer yes to in very low frequency. And answering yes to any one of these questions could have suggested abduction, being an abductee, although we don't really know these things to be the case because every case has to be investigated. But we wanted to get a feel for it.
Yeah.
We asked not 500 people where you have a margin of error of maybe 6%, and we didn't ask 1,000 people where you get a margin of error of maybe 3 or 4%, or 2,000 people where you get really accurate statistics. We asked 6,000 people in 3 2,000 person sweeps across the United States in scientifically randomized questioning. In other words, people were not abductees, they were just random people with clipboard in hand, a kind of a poll that is no longer done. And we asked as part of an omnibus poll, that is to say, the amount of questions that were asked were coupled with other, to keep the cost down, coupled with other other questions from other companies, but or other areas.
No, I see what you mean.
But
yeah.
All the other questions that were asked were sociological or political. None of them had to do with selling of products. What kind of toothpaste do you use, for example?
Mm-hmm.
So they all were political, so that people understood this was a serious poll. The numbers we got were too high. Couldn't go forward with them. They were too high. We knew that it was not great. This was not good. Numbers were too high. So we went ultra conservative. And we said we would only accept people who, we took the 10 questions and we divided them into lower indicator questions and higher indicator questions. Believe me, every question we asked was the result of lots of thought and preparation and using these questions on all sorts of other people beforehand. And every question was very carefully chosen. So we divided them into higher and lower. And they had to answer yes to 4 or all 5 of the higher indicator questions to make the poll, to make the survey itself, to make the results. So if you answered yes to all 5 of the lower indicator questions and you answered no to 2 of the higher indicator questions, so you answered, let's just say, 8 questions properly, with a yes, you did not make the poll.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the final poll survey, we got it down to 2% we only did it in the United States, of the American population. 2%. And we know that number is wrong. It's probably closer to 5%. But let's just say it's 2%.
We'll go with 2%. About 25 million, right?
Well, it's 2% of 300 million is about 6 million or something like that.
6 million, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're dealing with the world, it doesn't matter. You're dealing with 6 million people in the United States. No percentage that we knew that no percentage was going to be too low.
Yeah.
It was going to be low enough, rather. There was no such thing. All the percentages were going to have high numbers. So we know it's a global phenomenon. We know that only a small percentage of the people are abductees. Therefore, it hasn't been 7 to 10 generations ago when it started. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And even 20 generations ago. So we know, therefore, that the abduction phenomenon did not start with the building of the pyramids. Because by the year 500 BC, everybody in the whole world would have been an abductee.
Right, right.
So, and we know it didn't start in the 15th century, and we know it didn't start in the 17th century, and we can date it back in the United States to around the late 19th century.
Mm.
And then we do that through family histories, through our statistics, and all sorts of other stuff. But we do know, the question then is, are they going to continue until everybody is an abductee, or do they only need to go to a critical mass and leave everybody else alone?
Mm.
And the answer is, I think it's critical mass, and I think they've reached that now because we're seeing this program of integration now. And the vast majority of Americans are not abductees. Will those hybrids be eventually marrying into non-abductees? And the answer is, I do not know that.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know how the thing is going to be played out. I don't know what the end game is. All I know is that whatever it is, I don't like it.
But in any regard, in terms of if these hybrids are placed throughout population centers or cities, areas, etc., would that then mean that they could neurologically control other people within their vicinity, so to speak?
Yes, that's what that would mean, in close vicinity.
Mm.
Now, there are differences between their this is now we're really going inside this phenomenon. When people say, well, what kind of aliens are there? How many aliens are there? People said that there's 100 different kinds of aliens, 200, I have 5, I have 9 million different aliens. What the actual statistic is that what we actually see is there are very tall, very thin looking aliens. People say, God, they look like a praying mantis.
Yes, yes.
Those are the ones in control. Within that praying mantis group, there's actually a hierarchy that we can see. There are some who we come to crazy stuff, who actually wear some sort of cape or gown or robe or something or other that I laughed at when I first heard it. Now I hear it all the time and I realize, now I understand. They are the ultimate ones who are in control of the hierarchy. There's hierarchy of authority. There has to be all sorts of different things that happen to have this program put in. That's a whole other talk, and this is another hour's worth of talking that I could do in terms of how this program gets put into place. But then there are the regular insect-like ones, and eventually you get to taller gray aliens, smaller gray aliens, and hybrids. And then some people say they see some that look like they're reptilian, or they're this one's like, oh, this one's ugly. He's looking for reptilian.
Mm.
So I've asked people to draw what a reptilian looks like. And when they draw it, they're all over the place. Some look like they're made of sort of like alligators. Some look like they've got scaly skin. Some look like they're aliens, just regular aliens. Some look like, you know, there's no set look for a reptilian. It's sort of a variety. I think that these are hybridization aspects that we're looking at, that were offshoots for different reasons within this program. But I'll say, oh man, I don't like this. Oh, this reptilian is awful. He's horrible. He's terrible. He's scaring me. Oh, he's deadly. He's horrible. I say, well, what's he doing? Is he violent against you? No. Well, is he threatening you? No. Well, what's he doing? Well, I just don't like him. He's horrible. He's terrible. The bottom line is this. They're all seen together. They're all working in the same program. They're all abducting the same people. We see the reptilians every once in a while. It's a very, very, very small part of the abduction phenomenon. Mm. But we do see them. And that is all we see abducting humans. That is all. That is all. The problem is confabulation. And when people tend to remember things without hypnosis and they remember aliens, they're all over the place. They confabulate like crazy. They mix up their memories. They don't know what they're looking at. I've had people tell me that a person appeared in the room one time I wrote about them looked like a president of the United States, President Abraham Lincoln, with a stovepipe hat and a beard. And I said, okay, that sounds fine, okay. And they went on board, and clothes were taken off, and this happened. And I said, well, where's Abraham Lincoln type guy? Is he still with you? Oh, yeah, he's walking with me. Walking down the hallway. Well, is he in front of you? Is he next to you? Is he behind you? Where is he? You know, oh, he's in front of me. I said, well, if he's in front of you, can you see his stovepipe hat? Silence. No, I don't see his hat. What, do you see his hair? No, I don't see his hair. And she said, I don't think he looks like Lincoln. I think I was, no, he doesn't look like Lincoln. That's a resolution of the situation done by the abductee himself, even though I did not say a single word about it not being Lincoln.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when people take conscious recollections at face value, and that's where you get 1,000 different kinds of aliens visiting. Mm. Now, here's the counter-argument, Henrik.
Yeah.
Here comes the counter-argument. The counter-argument is, and nobody knows this argument, only me. I am the one true person in the world that knows this argument. So, therefore, I am automatically wrong. But here is the argument. You can make an argument that we are alone in the universe, that only Earth has intelligent, evolutionary, technological life, technologically based civilization life. You can make that argument. It is, in my opinion, a stupid argument, but it is a legitimate academic argument. The combination of events that happened on Earth was so unusual and so rare that it has never been repeated anywhere else, and life evolved in the way it did because of that. It's stupid, because it presumes that life can only evolve in the way it did here and can't evolve in different ways other places. It's a stupid argument. But it's a legitimate argument. You cannot make an argument for two. Only us and the aliens who are abducting us evolved in the entire universe, and there's no other life out there. That is an unsustainable argument. It is not an academically viable argument whatsoever. If there are two, there are 2 trillion automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have two. Two is ridiculous. There's got to be 2 billion or 2 million or whatever it is. There's got to be life all over the universe if there are two.
Mm-hmm.
That's the argument. It's probably wrong, but that is, I think, even though it's almost counterintuitive, it's a strong argument. I like that argument. Therefore, I don't know who other people are who's not abducting people. Maybe people are seeing beings who are not abducting. Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
All I know is that every single person who's had abduction experiences, who I've worked at and who my colleague Bud Hopkins have worked with, and Bud and Yvonne Smith and John Carver, they all see the same beings all the time and nobody else.
Mm.
And so that's the best I can do in terms of how many other aliens there are and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So there.
There we have it. And then that's your work.
I know what I was saying.
Yeah.
Wait. Let me finish my argument. I forgot.
Yeah.
The DNA.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Right, it's strongest with the ones that look insect-like. Well, it's slightly less with the taller gray aliens. It's less with the smaller gray aliens. It is less with hybrids. People can tell a difference in how they're being when they're being stared at in these neural engagement procedures. They can tell it's much less, and when they see hybrids on the ground, ones who really look human, it's much less. And they can tell that there's much less strength to it. It doesn't matter. It's still there, and we can't do it. So the answer is it watered down a little bit? Yeah, it is, because they're mainly human. But even a little bit is catastrophic. Mm. You know, it's like people tell me, oh, I'm telepathic. I can tell what's happening in people's minds and all the rest of that stuff. And they're not abductees, let's just say. And the answer to that is, if telepathy was even a minor part of the human condition, if a small number of people could, let's just say 1%, 90, let's just say 0.5% of people were telepathic and they could tell what was going on in other people's minds to a great degree of certainty and accuracy, we'd live in a different society.
Yeah.
The ripple effect from that would be mind-boggling. The world we live in would not be recognizable to us. Mm. Just a small number of people were true telepathic.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with this situation. If there's just a small number of people who can control us a little bit, that's all you need.
That's all you need. Yeah, that's true. And so in regards to this now then, if this is where your research has led you, so to speak, in terms of other plans in a way here, I mean, can we find out where some of these hybrids live? You mentioned this scenario, for instance, where they put all the furniture wrong, etc. That means that people are going to these to their houses somewhere and so forth. Is this something that could be tracked down? Where do they live? Who are these people? Can we bring this in from the memory, so to speak, of an abductee into the real life, where we really go and investigate who are these people in one sense? Is that possible way of finding more information, finding out more information here?
Yes, that is. Now I have to be very, very, very careful with what I say. There's always a possibility that I'm wrong. And if you go to somebody's house, knock on the door, and see if you're going to be affected or not, or see if, see who these people are, and they answer the door, and you think, say, are you a hybrid? And the next thing you know, the police show up and they take you away and you're put you in a psychiatric ward.
Yeah.
The fact is that it's a lot trickier than that.
Sure.
You have to have, it's a money question. You have to have people who will have equipment, video equipment, sound equipment, who can be far enough away from them and yet have a clear pathway, visual pathway. Who have a truck or van or whatever it is, like the FBI or whatever police facility is available, who can focus in without any abductees even knowing that it's happening, because if an abductee knows, then these beings are going to know.
Right.
And then you'd have to see people coming in and out of the house who are just average-looking people. And then you'd have to have a way of testing whether or not that they're abductee, whether or not that they're hybrids. And if you go and ask them, you will be convinced immediately that, no, they're not hybrids. They're just regular people.
See what you mean? Yeah.
Huh. But the answer is yes. The answer is still yes. And these are minor problems that can be worked out. And this is a very fruitful area. And this is the way to go. And this is something that people who have strong wills, strong hearts, and strong minds, and strong wallets. This is an area that is something that is to be looked at. Yes.
One thing as well, David, that I thought about is if abductees are regularly taken, so to speak, and whatever it is, coming into their rooms and so forth. And if this is prolonged throughout life and through generations and so forth, again, that idea of installing, as you mentioned before, like cameras, web cameras, monitor rooms, monitor an entire house where these people are, is that a possibility? Have that been done and failed, or what?
That's been done.
It's been done?
Yeah, that was the first thing that we did in terms of putting up cameras in people's bedrooms. I started that in 1986. Mm. With Melissa, the very first person I worked with, I bought a video camera. She told me she's being abducted 3 days in a row. I went to her apartment. I stuck it on a dresser, pointed at her bed. This is, of course, before computers and all that. I mean, before DVDs and everything. And I gave her some tapes, and I said, let's put the thing on it when you go to bed at night, taping, and if it happens at night, you'll be in one place, at least we know where to point it. And don't even look at the tape afterwards, just take it out, put another one in the next day, and I'll collect them, Well, what would happen was, nothing happened. Then she'd say to herself, nothing is going to happen. I don't need to turn that tape recorder on, that video tape recorder. I'll just turn it off. Followed by an abduction event. Mm. Or, oh, you know, I'm having such trouble sitting here. My neighbors upstairs are fighting. I can hear them. I'll just go into the living room and sleep on the couch, which cannot be seen by the camera,
mm.
followed by an abduction event. Or, and I've had I've had at least 10 different abductees sleeping every night for months under the watchful eye of a video camera. Or you get up, see the person getting up in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, walking over to the video camera, turning it off,
yeah.
And it's on the tape.
Mm.
And so we learned that the abductee cannot know.
Right, right.
Watching them. Now you come into ethical problems. Can you surreptitiously put a camera in their bedroom that they don't know about?
Ah, not so smart either, huh?
No, well, it's ethical problems.
Yeah,
and some abductees will actually sign off on that. They'll actually say, yes, you may do that.
Hmm.
And I don't have to know about it. We haven't done that so far.
But that would mean that they potentially know about it since you asked them, right?
Yeah, but it may not. But they may not know it's there. You wait for 6 months, and they've forgotten all about the fact that.
Sure.
I have a clause in a release that everybody signs, which says that I can collect anything I want, overtly or covertly. And I've never done that so far. We've come close, but the deal fell through with the long story.
Mm.
And it has to be hidden, in a way.
Yes. And now, multiple cameras as well, and then probably running all the time. It has to be some kind of digital technology that you record all these feeds into a computer or something like that, right?
That is correct. This has been done through a consortium of the Center for UFO Studies and the Mutual UFO Network. They put together a box that looked like a jewelry box that, in fact, had all sorts of sensing equipment in it. It had everything but what we want, which was a camera. And since all communication is telepathic, you're not going to hear anybody talking.
Mm, yeah.
And so it wanted to sense whether there was any change in the pressure, any change in the temperature, any change in this. And it would call up a certain number by itself and do a data dump at a place in San Antonio, Texas. And each person would then have a log, and they would have to write in their log, their diary, whether or not they thought something had happened on a certain night. And then there would be studies to see whether there was any changes in the normal background of this room when they said an abduction happened or might have happened. And the answer is this happened years ago. We have at least 4 or 5 people agreed to do this, and nobody studied the data yet.
Mm.
it's not happened.
Really?
The data's still in San Antonio. They say they're still working on it, but who knows what's happened.
Well, okay,
it's out of my hand.
But that's interesting, at least. Isn't, at least there is an attempt to find out more about it, because I guess, again, at this point, and considering the picture, so to speak, that you've painted for us, this we just need more data on it, right? We just need more
that
confirmation, you know? So.
Well, you need more. Right. Oh, absolutely. See, the thing is that when intelligent people have resources and can put their minds together to investigate this in terms of the physicality of it, whether people are living here or not, whether people are being abducted or not. All sorts of new and novel ways can be invented, I'm sure. Ways that I can't even think of. I mean, I'm a historian. I'm not an engineer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have those people coming forward. We just, the scientific and academic community won't do it. So we're trapped in the best we can do. And the best I can do is hypnosis. That's my strong point.
Mm.
We're hemmed in on all sides, I have to admit.
Mm. And yet, as you talked about here, the consequence of this is obviously dire. You know, if we are concerned about, you know, the ways what the human being is today, so to speak, that this is something that is changing and going out the door, so to speak. If this is
there is no possibility that what I uncovered in my corner of Pennsylvania, where I live, which is near the state of New Jersey, near the state of Delaware, near the state of Maryland, near the in upstate Pennsylvania, northern Pennsylvania. There's no possibility that in my little corner of the United States that I have discovered where the program, the integrated hybrids, is beginning. That did not happen. If I have found it, it's happening everywhere now.
Yeah.
It's not possible that it's just happening here. And one time, a friend of mine told me about a letter that she got from a woman in Germany. And this woman said, you know, it's a thing. She says, I think that I'm going out with these. And she has very little about the subject. She's never undergone hypnosis, as far as I know. I've never met this woman or all this woman is. She says, I think I'm going to stores with them now. They're taking me to stores. Some woman in Germany. This is the craziest damn thing to say, unless you have background and you think to yourself, oh my God, you know, it is happening everywhere.
Huh.
I've talked with some people in England recently, and they talked about, one woman talked about how she saw, now this was done on board an object, and it was done sort of like with an image on the screen, a woman walking down a sidewalk and waiting for a bus and getting on a bus and sitting down. And then she was asked by these hybrids and aliens there, what did this woman do wrong? Was everything okay? Did she do it all? Did she do it the correct way? And the answer was, yeah, everything was correct. Yeah, everything was fine. Oh, that's what you want to do. Okay, that was fine. Yeah, that's typical stuff that I get all the time now, you know, like, did she do things right? If she were to do this, well, she's actually walking down a real sidewalk waiting for a bus, and if she gets on the bus, she'll be able to do it correctly and all that. And, So these are people in England. This is happening, you know.
Yeah.
And so I know it's happening around the world. It's not happening just right here where I am.
Yeah.
So, and this has always been a global phenomenon, just like the UFO phenomenon. It's always been global. And the whole point here, of course, is that the UFO phenomenon is the abduction phenomenon.
Yes.
They are not separate. It's the same deal. It's all part of the same program.
Well, David, what we can say here to begin to round things up with this time is that we'd love to have you back here at some point, and because again, what you've been painting for us here is a picture that is developing, so to speak. There's things coming to light all the time, and as you continue your work, that, you know, things are obviously going to develop there as well, you know. And but in terms of how people can find out more information about the things that we have talked about here today, is this material as well that they find in The Threat, for instance, or any of your other books that people want to study more?
Yeah. Some of it is in The Threat. Now, if anybody doesn't know anything about abductions at all, you start with Secret Life, which takes a person on a typical abduction event from beginning to end, and sort of the consequences of it for the person as well. And then the second book takes you much more in depth into it. And things go down a lot easier for the person because you realize, oh, I see how this fits in with the first one. They're in a slot. It's logical.
Right.
But since, and that book came out in 98, but since 1998, I've written almost nothing about this, just a little bit of material. There's very little bit. I've been saving it for this book that I keep threatening to write but haven't written yet. And But I've talked a lot about it. I've talked more about it on your show than most places, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
You've tapped me pretty dry. You run me dry.
Well, so, what we like to do it. We like to find out what's going on. I must say, tell you, this is obviously a very, very scary scenario that you're painting for us, and obviously a very interesting one. And let me tell you, sometimes I'm having these questions as I'm out in society in generally, are these people clones, or do they even think for themselves? You know, whether or not they're hybrids or not, that I don't know, but there's something going on there. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Right. Well,
it's crazy.
That's true. And here in the United States, there's a hell of a lot of people who don't think for themselves, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But not in the sense that we mean it, though.
Sure.
But the fact is that you know, these are questions that I think everybody will be wrestling with eventually.
Yeah.
If people listen to the, I think I've talked with you for about 3 hours now.
Almost. I think it's about 3 hours. Yes, yes.
That they're going to learn quite a lot. Now, it's, you know, the way I look at it is, okay, so you don't believe what I'm believing. So okay, that's fine. The answer to that then is, do it yourself. Do hypnosis with abductees. See what they say to you. Now, of course, it's harder to do than that. You have to sort of learn how to do that. Now, I'll be willing to help people, whoever wants to do it. But the fact is that I want other people to start doing this research. Mm. I'm very happy to be wrong. Mm. I would like other people to prove me wrong. Go ahead and prove me wrong. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Only I can just get other people to do this kind of research. Mm. That's all I want. And if I'm wrong, fine. And if I'm wrong, okay, I'm right. So who cares? It doesn't matter whether I'm right. What matters is what's happening. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, as I said there, David, we'd love to have you back here at some point, talk a little bit more, go into some aspects here that we might have touched upon or potentially get some questions out that might have come in to you at that point. But to round things up here for this time, then, again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time talking with us about your work, about your research. Very important stuff, obviously, if this, as you say, indeed is happening, if this is the case, and it's true. But tell us again about your website so people know where to go, where to find out more information, and where they can get copies of your books as well, David.
Well, my website is www.ufoabduction.com, and it's called the International Center for Abduction Research, and you'll see my webpage immediately if you click correctly. I mean, if you click on it. And my books, I don't sell my books personally, but they're available in bookstores, and they're available through Amazon.com. Some of my books have been translated into French and Spanish and German, and actually, I think my first book was Spanish. It was translated into Swedish.
There you go.
The UFO Controversy in America, I think. And then in Japanese and Chinese and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But they are available through normal. They're still in print. They're in what's called print on demand now. You know, in other words, if anybody wants a copy, they'll print shop one. So they'll never go out of print.
Excellent. So again, UFOabduction.com. Yeah, finish off for us, David.
Well, I do need to write a new book and tell people the story from 1998 to when the threat came out till now, and that's my I've been working on that somewhat steadily. I have not been able to get a publisher. That's been the main problem, and so I might have to go to more receptive publishers, which means less large publishers. And smaller presses, but I do need to get this published and need to get on with my life and all the rest of that stuff. Because once I publish this book and two more books, which will be easier to do, the one on methodology, which is nearly done, and then yet another completely crazy book, Henrik, after that one is done, then I'm going to retire. That's going to be it. I'm going to spend all my time sitting in my house and watching television.
Well,
and I'm going to be happy.
I see what you mean in one way. You don't want to deal with this anymore, huh?
Nope. Don't want to deal with it anymore.
Well, you have a good point in regards to that this information needs to get out, though. So I think it's important that you do write it. You know, it's a perspective that needs to be out there, again, considering the consequence of this if this is what's happening right now, you know?
Right.
So,
right. No, I agree.
You know, keep up the good work, David, keep at it, okay? And we'd love to have you back, as I mentioned. So thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, that concludes our very interesting program with Dr. David M. Jacobs. Thank you so much for joining us here in the members section, and thank you for your support. My name is Henrik, and my thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth. We'll be back soon with more radio. Keep your eye on redicecreations.com for the latest. Take good care. Bye-bye.